So you have actually been looking at how midwives feel in the room.
Mm.
And I know you've spoken about the messages sent by the room to midwives. What do you mean by that?
When I started talking to midwives about what they thought about hospital birth rooms, one of the things I noticed really quickly was that midwives kept talking to me about what the room said to them. So they would use all this language about the room speaking to them. And it was really consistent. Like all of the midwives that I have interviewed use this kind of language and talk about this in that way. And so when we kind of drilled down through that analysis, what we realized is that the midwives really do feel like the room is talking to them. They feel like the room says things to them. And those are what I have described as messages from space. The midwives actually receive messages from the space around them about what to expect in that space, about what sorts of things are likely to happen in that space. In some of the research that I've undertaken, I actually gave midwives a range of 6 images of very different birth rooms to try and understand what sorts of messages they would get from these different places. And the messages sometimes were really quite hilarious. Like they, you know, midwives would say things like, oh my gosh, that's a nursing home. You don't go in there to have a baby. You're going to go in there to have a lie down and a cup of tea. Or they'd look at a different kind of space and say, oh, that's not a place to have a baby. That's a torture chamber. That looks like awful things are going to happen to me if I go in there. So they had these very clear, very strong messages that were mediated purely by the design and aesthetics of the room that they were looking at images of.
And that has an impact on the way that they work in that space, doesn't it?
That's exactly right. What we found is that for when midwives receive those messages actually engender a feeling response in the midwife. So essentially the midwife gets a message from the room, the midwife has a set of feelings about that message, and then those feelings play a large part in dictating how the midwife actually behaves and conducts her practice in the room. And we know that the way that we feel at work, which is sometimes referred to as our affective state, actually has a large amount of influence on our cognition and behaviour when we're at work. And that's why this idea that the rooms were making the midwives feel a particular way was really quite important, because things like creative and critical thinking, things like decision making, are really actually impacted by that affective state that we're in while we're in the workplace.
So what did midwives say about the layout of the room? What would they like to see in it?
Oh, midwives said so many things about the layout of the rooms that they've been working in. We can't really talk about layout without talking about the bed. If there was one object in the room that got the most kind of airtime from midwives, it was the bed. The things that are most highly problematic in those rooms are the fact that they're not flexible. Often the layout is not adaptable. So we have a bed that is in the middle of the room, and that usually can't be moved. And there's not very often a lot of adaptable space around the bed. So that was one of the really big issues for midwives. The other one was the fact that very often, particularly in the delivery suite, although sometimes also in the birth centre, what we see is that the layout of the room is such that as soon as you open the door, you're actually looking straight onto the bed. So A, we have an issue that there's sort of nowhere for the woman to go in the room except onto the bed. And then once she's on the bed, every time that door opens and closes, she's actually exposed and is in full view, not only of anyone walking in the door, but often of anyone walking by in the corridor behind her. Or if she's been unlucky enough to be placed in one of the rooms that's very close to the central desk, sometimes even anyone who's sitting at the desk taking phone calls can check in on how the woman's going every time the door of the room opens and shuts. So those are really fundamental design issues that midwives would really like to see addressed. There are a whole raft of other ones, but I think if we just started with those two, that would certainly be very helpful.
Do midwives, when they are in rooms that are difficult, do they try and help reduce those adrenaline levels in the labouring women?
They do. And so what we see is that in pretty much all environments, midwives will make attempts to make adaptations to the room. And they will try to do things like adjusting lighting, bringing in resources to provide options for women, so things like birth balls and mats and things like that. If there's a bath in the room, they will often run the bath so that that's there as a visible option and resource for the woman, that the woman doesn't have to think about whether or not that's something she wants. It's just there, it's on offer. However, what I've seen in the research that I've done is that the success of those attempts to adapt the room is really reliant on what I've ended up calling the friendliness of the room. And so that means that some rooms you actually just are really struggling to make any kind of adaptation to. There are things like you can't control the lighting, you can't control the temperature, you know, you don't have any way to create a sort of softer or warmer place for a woman to be. Other rooms actually lend themselves to those kind of adaptations, or if you're really lucky, they actually already have some of that stuff built into the room. And so obviously it's much more sort of successful for the midwife in her attempts in those rooms. And what we see is that there's a really big difference in the way that the midwives feel about their practice, again, predicated on those two things. So if they're really, what comes out in their language when they're describing it is they will often say that they're fighting or struggling or battling is one of the words that they use with the room to try and get it into a workable space for women to labour in. Whereas if they're in a room that offers them more opportunity to do that, they actually feel more relaxed themselves. And there are knock-on effects in their practice from those two states.
Design is, you know, it's up to every individual as to what works for them and what they like. How do you work when you are, you know, designing something like the Royal North Shore Hospital?
Mm-hmm.
How do you work what everybody wants into the room?
It's a very good question. A lot of consultation is a good starting point. But I think you're absolutely right. Our responses to design and aesthetics are to a certain extent mediated by our personal taste. And you're right, it's a pretty big ask to imagine that we could design a room that everybody would love. However, underneath the layer of our personal taste sits another layer, which is our unconscious responses to design and aesthetics, which we all have. And what we know is that at that unconscious level, there are actually influences that design and aesthetics have upon us that transcend our personal taste. So, for instance, one of those is a thing called the biophilia effect, which is a really well-researched and well-documented effect whereby human beings have a very particular response to being exposed to nature. And in terms of design and aesthetics, that can be an image of nature, it can be a view of nature, it can be a use of colour and texture that just sort of intimates nature, that gives us an idea of it. Things like using wood within the room instead of, you know, laminate panelling, all those things that kind of bring a little bit of nature into the room. There is actually it actually exists at a metabolic level. There is a biophysiological response that we have to those images or senses of nature being in the room with us that actually transcend our sense of personal taste. And that's the same with threat perception as well. So we're not conscious of what our brain is doing when we're sitting in a room looking around for the first time in a new space. But part of what our brain is doing for us is actually detecting threat. And so design and aesthetics can reduce the level of threat that we detect in the room. And again, that transcends personal taste. That's not just about do you like being in a yellow room. That's about regardless of whether you like the yellow room. If the yellow room is full of sharp, pointy objects, your brain will actually process that as an environment that is full of potential threat. So I guess that's the stuff that we're trying to address. We're sort of trying to come down another layer deeper underneath personal taste.